Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing alternative points of view and to challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. I'm Evan Davis, your host for this edition. In last week's show, I made the announcement about a rally that would be taking place at the Ohio Department of Natural Resources on Monday as the Oil and Gas Land Use Commission would be voting on whether or not to grant fracking leases for the first time on public lands, including state parks. I attended, but the rally was moving inside. Just as I arrived, and so it went inside ODNR's heavily guarded compound on Morse Road. Inside, there were nearly 100 people, many with signs urging the commission to reject all the proposed fracking leases. The protesters were from various parts of Ohio, many with an organization called Save Our Parks. They were agitated and loud and occasionally disrupted the meeting with shouts and jeers, prompting the committee's chair to warn those in attendance to simmer down, lest she order the room be cleared. But ultimately, it was a series of internal hurdles within the commission itself that prevented it from accomplishing what it set out to do, which was to open up 3 state parks to the fracking lease bidding process. This all started in 2011 when the gerrymandered Republican-dominated state legislature passed a bill that stripped the state parks and other public lands of protections against commercial exploitation, at least with regard to fracking. But in the 12 years since then, nothing much has happened. Then, in May of this year, the Republican legislature struck again, amending the existing law to mandate that state parks must be open to fracking leases instead of simply permitting it. That set the wheels in motion to, in the view of fracking opponents and state park advocates, doom our state parks to irreparable harm. Early in the commission's meeting, the commissioners retreated into executive session in order to discuss how to conduct their conversations in the rest of the meeting so as to avoid disclosing the names of the companies that are proposing to frack the parks. That, it seems, is stipulated in the statute that the companies proposing to do the damage are anonymous during the bidding process. Protesters seized the opportunity to continue the rally inside, complete with a couple of speeches and some spirited protest songs.
My name is Salt Fork, and I've lived here for years. Now they want to drill in me, turn my water into tears, and threaten all the nature friends who shelter on my land. And we need you to help us stop it if you can. We need you to stand up.
Drillers, please go home.
Everybody,
leave our parks alone.
park away for good, and parks safe for everyone. Our children need our parks. We need our parks for our health and wellness. We do not need parks filled with pollution, air. We don't need our water contaminated from gas and oil, radioactive waste that comes back up out of the well. Most citizens don't know this, and has to be trucked away and re-injected into injection wells. We don't need it. So we need you to stand up, say,
hands off, leave our parks alone.
Drink money.
comes out of the hole, and they think they can put it down another hole, and they think it's going to stay there. Well, guess what? It's a lie. 4 injection wells in Athens County are leaking right now. 2 in Noble County, and God knows how many else are leaking around the state. They tell us it's safe. But guess what? It's not. They're poisoning our water. They're poisoning our land. They're killing the planet.
Yeah.
We are in a shale play. The Utica and Marcellus Shale are some of the biggest carbon emitters, methane emitters in the world.
Our children deserve better.
Yes, yes they do. Our grandchildren have to get this waste. They're going to live with this.
Yes.
They're going to, if they live, if the planet lives. So we're all here today to say, deny these nominations. They can. They can do it today. They can do it in this meeting. They should do it.
Yes.
The law says they can and they should.
Yes.
And that's why we're here.
Before I came to this meeting, I was rudely awakened by noises from oil and gas drilling that's going on in my neck of the woods. They were blowing down something. It sounded like a jet airplane. But we're dealing with toxic compounds. Long after the well rig gets placed somewhere else to drill another rig, there's going to be compressor stations which emit as much dangerous material as what the fracking process it does, you know, emit volatile organic compounds, xylenes, benzene, things that are known carcinogens, that are known mutagens, they're toxic. We don't want our kids breathing that. We know there's compressor stations every so many miles. Those will not go away. The pipelines will not go away. The gathering lines for the well pads will not go away. Those storage facilities that sit up above where the well pad used to be, I don't think I have any pictures on this poster of it, those will not go away. So once they're done fracking, things don't return to normal. All those cuts and pipelines that fragment the ecosystems, those are there forever. And if we don't stop now, we're, as Roxanne said, we're just, you know, playing into this huge methane bomb that's in this area right now. It's all pressurized and it all leaks, no matter what anybody tells you. There are constant leaks. If you don't believe it, go to Earthworks. They have FLIR cameras that can detect these leaks. They can even tell you what types of hydrocarbons are coming out of these leaks. And you can see some of the damage that's been done right now to ecosystems. If you drive out to Tappan Lake, there's hardly a side road you can go up if there isn't some type of pipeline cutting across there. And we don't want this happening. And these, the bottom line, folks, these are our parks.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
This is them. And how dare they come in here from out-of-state corporations and just want to suck that gas up and act like it's not affecting us. And come to Sio and Jewett and Tadis and look at these places. They're not rich people. There's a handful of folks that have made some money off of it, but they're not rich.
Right.
These little towns are falling apart, and right beside them, millions and millions of dollars of resources that are underneath our feet are going to fund their pockets. And it's not fair and it's not right. And this whole public participation process is a big fat ruse.
Yes.
Recreation is so far down on the list of what's at stake here. Our saving our water supply. We've already ruined the Miami Valley water supply with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base radioactivity.
Yeah.
How many more watersheds do we have? And we also ruined the watersheds in Appalachia. with mining. It's all mercury, and you know, and then with droughts, our reservoirs are not going to show up. And then what are we going to do? And then it's our atmosphere, sixth mass extinction, all the methane being released. It's so far beyond outdoor recreation.
Yeah.
So first, I just want to thank all the media that has come out to cover this. This is a critical, critical issue. It was getting under cover for a long time. But now, today it's not, and thank you for being here. Secondly, there's a pair of studies that illustrate what's going on here. The first study is from Ohio State University, and it looks at the amount of money made from outdoor recreation in Ohio. And it's $8.3 billion, something like that, per year added to the Ohio economy by preserving our parks, our wildlife areas, and our public lands for people to go hike and camp and stay in the lodges and so forth. So we had an event in July in Salt Fork, and my husband and I went out there. We stayed in the hotel for a couple of nights. We ate at Cracker Barrel like every day. We put some money into that economy. Millions of Ohioans do that every single year, and it generates $8.3 billion and something like 140,000 jobs every year. That's in perpetuity if these lands are protected.
Yes.
Meanwhile, another study from the Ohio River Valley Institute looks at the seven top fracking counties in Ohio. And fracking promised jobs, it promised prosperity, and as Randy says, that has not materialized. Those counties have lost population. They have lost income. They have lost economy. Where's that money going? It's not going to the people who live there.
Look at Texas.
Right. Yeah, look at Texas, look at Pennsylvania, look at some of the other areas being fracked. And finally, the idea that the companies that are trying to frack our parks, that their identities get to be kept secret, that the amount of money they're offering gets to be kept secret. And meanwhile, we have hundreds of people whose names are on public comments, at least 150 so far, who said they did not even submit those comments. And those names are on the record. There's no way to reach most of these people to even let them know. It is shameful. It is backwards and shameful.
Once the commission returned, one commissioner short of their allotted five seats, they began a lengthy and tedious debate as to how exactly to proceed. No leases on public lands like this have been granted in the past, and the process for doing so was never fully established. After a little over 2 hours, the four commissioners stalemated over the state park leases. The Department of Natural Resources representative was pushing a set of lease restrictions or conditions aimed at mitigating the impact of the fracking, but if that proposal had passed, the commission would have immediately moved to open the leasing process. If it had been rejected, then the eventual leases would have proceeded without any restrictions at all. The proposal and the state park leases were tabled until the commission's next meeting, thereby leaving the state park's fate in limbo until sometime in October. I spoke later with Kathy Cohen Becker, one of the organizers of the protest. So my understanding is that legislation passed by the Ohio legislature in 2011 stripped the state parks of the protection they had previously enjoyed by rendering them eligible for fracking leases. That took place a little over 10 years ago, so why hasn't there been more alarm until just now? What has changed recently?
Yeah, right. So the HB 133 from 2011 stated that the parks, the nominations of the state parks may be approved for oil and gas development. So the operative word there was may. And there was a great deal of pushback and outcry at the time. You might remember a huge march in 2012 where Bill McKibben came to town and Josh Fox was there. About 800 people showed up, took over the State House atrium for several hours. It was a big deal, and there was a lot of other pushback and resistance to fracking in the parks. And then in 2014, it came to light. Documents came to light showing that the Ohio Department of Natural Resources at that time, they are supposed to regulate oil and gas. They were actually working with oil and gas to devise public relations plans to try to sell the idea of fracking in the parks to the people, and referring to environmentalists as obstructionists and things like that. So when that came to light, there was, like, it even took it to the next level, the resistance to this and the outcry about this. And Governor Kasich was governor at the time, and he literally did an about-face and said, I don't support this anymore. We're not going to do it. The 2011 legislation, what it did was name what was called then the Oil and Gas Leasing Commission. It's now called the Oil and Gas Land Management Commission. So Kasich just didn't name anyone to that commission. And then Governor DeWine came in, and he didn't really name anyone either for a long time until recently, and they weren't meeting. They just weren't doing anything. So then what happened in December of 2022, there was a bill called HB 507, which was about poultry chicks. So all it was to regulate the number of poultry chicks that could be sold in a batch. And I think it cut it from 6 to 3 or something like that. It was mainly for 4-H kids. That bill passed the House, got into a Senate committee, and the oil and gas representatives in the State House stuffed the chicken bill, is the way it's often referred to, with several amendments pro-oil and gas, one of which declared that fracked gas is green energy, and another changed that language from approved nominations to lease the parks for fracking to shall. So that shall basically kickstarted that commission again, and they had to start meeting. They had to put together rules. So there was even no process for them to even take applications, which are called lease nominations. But what happens is the oil and gas companies submit a nomination saying, I want to frack in Salt Fork State Park or Valley Run Wildlife Area. Here are the exact parcels I want to frack. And we don't even know what those nominations, who the oil and gas company is behind each nomination. Their identity is shielded until there's an award. But there was, at the time, no process for that. So the commission had to come up with a process, and so it kickstarted that. Now, once those rules got into place, and they had to go through their own approval procedure, they were approved on May 28th. So at that point, the legislation said that the language reverts back to may lease. So that commission does have the authority to either, in the 2011 legislation, the law said that they can approve or disapprove. So that is still in place, but that commission has now started operating. So, but that's why there was such, you know, why this is back and why it is so urgent now, because it was, you know, just in January that DeWine signed that bill, and it went into effect in April. And then those rules went into, you know, started working their way through the system. They were approved on May 28th. And so there have now been, actually 15 nominations, several of them, 4 or 5 of them are for Department of Transportation land along like a highway somewhere. And 4 of those were approved at the meeting of the commission on Monday of the Department of Transportation land. And then the rest of them are all for our state parks and wildlife areas. So for Salt Fork State Park, there's at least 2 different companies with at least, 5 different nominations. And then Wolf Run State Park has been nominated by a company. Valley Run Wildlife Area, which is up in Carroll County, has 3 nominations, but it looks like they may all be from the same company. And then Zepernick Wildlife Area, which is a major fishing spot, is just beautiful ponds and fishing up there. That's also been nominated.
So we both attended the commission meeting on Monday, and it was pretty evident from the way they conducted themselves and the things that they said and the amount of time that they took to go over procedural matters that they were kind of charting new territory as they went. They didn't seem certain of the process. There was a lot of wrangling over that. In fact, most of the meeting consisted of that, which was frustrating for me because I went there to record it, and there really wasn't much there that's useful. But one thing that was clear is that the commissioners do seem to be under the impression that they are obligated to open the parks for leasing. Let's go to a clip of that now.
From my standpoint, our job here today is somewhat limited. I think as we've talked about, I think the statute is very clear about what the scope of our authority is and is not. The statute's terms make, in my view, abundantly clear that the General Assembly, which is the body responsible for making these policies, has determined that these state lands will be opened up for potential leasing. And I don't believe we have the authority today as a commission to decide whether that will be allowed generally, whether horizontal drilling will be allowed generally. Those are calls for the legislature to make, and they have.
So we heard them say that in so many words, but you're saying that that's not really the case. Could it be that they're confused because of the recent reversal of the language, or are they operating under some kind of an active assumption driven by something that we're not seeing legislatively?
I think it's probably the latter. Mm-hmm. The chair of the commission, and we've met with her, Save Ohio Parks people have met with her several times through this process, and she had not said this to us before. But during that meeting, she said multiple times, we have been directed to lease this land. We do not have the authority to deny. She even stated at one point that the statute said shall frack, which is not the case anymore. And she knows that's not the case because we talked to her during a break and she said, yes, that statute is dead, meaning it has reverted to may frack. So there must be something going on behind the scenes that we're not seeing. This is really a democracy issue, because you saw that that room was packed with people who do not want fracking. We sent out action alerts and have generated thousands of letters, and at least hundreds of people, completely apart from our action alerts, have also written in and said they do not want to see the parks fracked. Two of those people are Frances Strickland and Hope Taft, two former first ladies. So the public is not for this, and yet this commission, for whatever reason, feels that our input just does not matter. Like, they will say, oh, we appreciate your input, we want your input, but in the end, it does not matter if, you know, they basically intimated they feel that they have to say yes, which negates everything, you know, all the input that they've gotten. So this is a democracy issue.
Now, that being the case, if that's true, they could, in theory, just rubber stamp these applications, but they're not quite doing that. They're wanting to impose some restrictions on the leases, such as a 1,000-foot setback requiring the fracking operations to be 1,000 feet or more from the perimeter of the state parks that are being proposed, mm-hmm. Which puts it on private land in most cases, which they would have to separately lease. And then I understand they would drill at an angle, slant drilling, underneath the state park land. That seems to me like it might be a somewhat daunting restriction, certainly increasing the expense for the people wanting to do the fracking. Is there an opportunity here for the commission to impose such restrictions as to make it simply undesirable or unprofitable?
Yeah, well, the fracking companies will tell you that they can now frack 2, 3, 4 miles. So the way fracking works, your listeners probably know, the drill goes straight down for a while and then it turns and goes horizontally. So it's the horizontal lateral. And that lateral, they will say, a mile is very common for it to extend. And they will say they can go 2, 3, 4 miles. Now, the fracking process also requires millions and millions of gallons of water that's laced with sand and toxic chemicals and blasted into that rock, and that's what frees the gas from the rock. And so the farther that lateral goes, the more water, the more chemicals, the more sand that's going to take, and then the more that water comes back up. It's got PFAS in it. It's radioactive from substances it's found underground. It cannot be put back into the water table. It cannot be recycled. So it has to be injected into injection wells that supposedly store it permanently. But 6 of those injection wells in Athens and Noble County were just this past week ordered to close because they're leaking. They're leaking into the water table. So that's not safe either. But to answer your question specifically, so one part of the process is that the whatever agency is in charge of managing the land that's been nominated, and in the case of the parks and the wildlife areas, that's ODNR, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, they can make comments. And so the director of ODNR made fairly long comments, about 16 pages, asking for basically a series of restrictions, because I mentioned the rules that were put into place, they were rushed through because of 507, and there's basically nothing in them. They're about three sentences long, so there's nothing to protect any land in those rules. And so the director of ODNR was asking for these. The attitude seems to be, we have to open these up, even though the statute does not say that. The statute says they have discretion, but they seem to believe they must open them up. And so they're trying to ask for some restrictions, like a 1,000-foot setback, which is about a quarter of a mile. Recent study in Pennsylvania just found that people who live within a whole mile of fracking operations, that there's much higher risk of childhood cancers of a certain sort, like lymphomas, asthma, other health, like lifelong health complications for people who live close to fracking. So a 1,000-foot setback is not really very much, but that's what they were asking for. And they were asking for not to have fracking going on during hunting seasons, because hunters require, you know, rely on it being quiet, and that doesn't happen with fracking. It's very noisy. There's a lot of lights. There's a lot of truck traffic. And there were some other things about view shed and things like that in those restrictions that they're asking for. And what ended up happening in that commission meeting, there's two members of the commission that are supposed to, so it's a five-member commission. There's one from ODNR, and she's the commission chair. There's one that's supposed to represent conservation, but he voted for all of the fracking along the highways. There's one for real estate and finance, and there's two for oil and gas. So one of those oil and gas commissioners basically said, we don't want to take any of those restrictions in the lease itself. We want to put those into a later, quote, surface use agreement, a later negotiation. And the ODNR chair basically said, they've got to go in now so that companies, when they're bidding, they understand these are the restrictions that we're working under. And so the finance representative supported the oil and gas guy. The conservation representative supported the chair. One of the oil and gas commissioners wasn't present. So the commission deadlocked 2-2. And so it seemed that the ODNR people really wanted to get approval with those restrictions in that Monday meeting. That's what they came to do, and they weren't able to do it. And so it's been tabled. They've said that they are going to hold a future meeting in about a month, sometime in October. And basically, this is unfortunately about several weeks where the oil lobbyists, and we have recently learned that there are literally 95 lobbyists registered to lobby the Oil and Gas Land Management Commission on behalf of the gas industry, the oil and gas. So that's a lot of lobbying. And these weeks give them time to lobby for weaker restrictions or to move the restrictions to a later date when they will matter a lot less. So it's not necessary, you know, this was, no matter how you sliced it, it wasn't going to come out good, whether they approved it with the restrictions or if they table it, they may try to weaken the restrictions. So we'll see.
Well, if they approve the restrictions on Monday, wouldn't that then move the process automatically to the drafting of the leases themselves?
Yes, if they had approved, which they didn't, then that means that would have opened up a bidding process. So this will happen with the four parcels that are DOT land. They're going to go up on the commission's website as an open bid, and then oil and gas companies can bid on those parcels. And the DOT did not ask for any restrictions. The only thing they wanted to put into the lease, which was approved, was that if they're in case of an accident, then the state will be held harmless. So those are moving forward. A bid will go out, and then they'll get bidding from the different companies, and then they pick the one that gets them the most money, basically. Like, they see this as it becomes a commodity at that point.
So the commissioners, at least the ODNR commissioner who was the chair, is in theory charged with being a steward of the state parks. Mm-hmm. And it would seem that fracking activity, given all of the known harm that it does, which is really indisputable. I mean, there's no one that credibly denies mm-hmm. that harm is done by mm-hmm. that process, would be inconsistent with that mission to protect the parks. Do you think that that commissioner, at least, was conflicted, maybe trying to do the best she felt she could under a very awkward and untenable situation?
Yeah, I think they think that fracking is a done deal, so they're going to try to put some restrictions on it. But again, that's not what the law says. Even 507 that kickstarted this, the language has reverted to may approve these leases, not shall anymore, because the rules are now in place. The commission, all of them, they do have discretion. So it's... I guess we really don't understand why they keep saying, and why the chair kept saying in that meeting, that they don't have discretion, that they don't have the authority to deny these leases. They absolutely do under the law. And one other point about the law, and this was also put into place by in 2011, it says that during its decision making, the commission shall discuss and consider 9 things by statute that they have to consider. So there are things like environmental impact, geological impact, public comments, the agency comments, which was one of them, economic impact, and there's several more. The only one discussed was the agency comment, which was the ODNR restrictions. None of the others were discussed. And by statute, they have to discuss all of them for each nomination. And they didn't come close to that. So that's another thing that, you know, is a mystery.
Well, I distinctly recall them saying that they wouldn't discuss those things at one point in that particular meeting.
Yeah, they said that they would not discuss. The meeting started off with a discussion, you know, talking about the, I guess, the revelation that many of the pro-fracking comments that came in actually were not signed by the people whose names are on them. There's up to 150, and there's probably more, and most of those people are not reachable because those phone numbers don't work. So there's been a lot of astroturfing going on by the industry, but the Ohio Attorney General has issued some subpoenas and is opening an investigation into this. Well, the commission chair started off the meeting saying that we are aware of this happening and we're going to let the AG handle that, and we don't think it has any bearing on these proceedings and we're not going to consider those comments. Well, of course it has bearing on the proceedings if you have hundreds, if not thousands, of faked comments. How does that not have a bearing on the proceedings when you have to consider public comments by law? So that's another thing that makes no sense about this proceeding.
Unless, of course, they go through the effort to vet or verify the comments. Do you know if they're planning on doing that?
They are not. We have talked to them about that extensively, and they say we don't have the wherewithal to do that. We don't have the staff or the capability of doing that, and we'll let the AG handle it. The problem with that is the AG, even if they do pursue an investigation as they've said they would, it's going to take a while. It's not going to be done by the time the next meeting comes up. And again, by statute, the commission has to make a decision within 6 months, 180 days of the first nominations. And those first nominations were May 30th. So, you know, around October, going into November, they have to decide. And it's very doubtful the AG would be done by then. So again, this is, if they are just refusing to consider this, and Save Ohio Parks actually brought this to their attention, that there were comments by people whose names are on the comment who did not write them, because we made a lot of those phone calls and reached about 98 people who told us that they did not write those comments. And we took that to the commission, you know, before the story broke that was going on. And they just declined. They just said, we're not doing anything about this.
Indeed, some of the people whose names were fictitiously hijacked for that ruse told Save Ohio Parks that they explicitly did not support fracking in the parks.
Quite a few of them did. A lot of them didn't know what fracking is. So, and once we told them, they said, I would never support that.
So what exactly is the risk to the parks per se? We understand the general risks associated with fracking, but since according to a rule imposed by the governor, the actual fracking operation can't take place on the surface within the perimeters of the park. All of the activity in the park lands would be happening underground. What exactly is the direct threat to the parks themselves?
Right, yeah. Governor DeWine has said no, quote, surface use, which means like no frack rigs, no pipelines, nothing in the park itself. And that's part of maybe what's trying to get watered down. That is not in statute. That is simply in an executive order that either could be ignored or certainly if another governor comes in could be rescinded. But in terms of how this would affect the park, so, you know, especially if it's 400 feet outside the park border, but even 1,000 feet outside the park border, you know, as I mentioned, it requires a lot of water. The lakes in both Salt Fork and Wolf Run are they're used for public water supply, and they are supplied by streams that come into the lake. So even if they're not taking water directly from that lake, they're going to have to take it. You know, this is millions and millions, hundreds of millions of gallons. They're going to be taking it from the streams that feed that lake, and that's going to affect that lake and affect its chemical makeup if there's fresh water, not the same amount of fresh water coming in as it did. There's going to be methane releases and air pollution. Air pollution travels. It doesn't stay. It doesn't magically stop at the park border. There's going to be a lot of noise. Fracking is extremely noisy. People who live near it say it sounds like a jet engine when those compressor stations go off. Noise travels, and that's going to affect the animals in the park. And then, of course, there's a risk of a spill or, you know, if the brine that's laced with toxic chemicals, there's going to be, well, you know, hundreds of truck trips are required for each frack because they've got to bring in all that water, they got to bring in all those chemicals, and then once the fracking happens, they've got to take all that toxic stuff off-site. And so that's done by truck, and it's hundreds of truck trips per frack. The company, one of the companies looking to lease Salt Fork has, you know, proposed something like 16 frack well pads around the park that would house something like 89 wells, and each of those wells would do multiple amounts of fracking. And so that's, you know, going to, I don't see how that, you know, you have that going on in a circle all around your park. That's the largest park in Ohio, and so if that is just assaulted with fracking from all sides, it's just not going to be a place that people are going to want to fish, camp, hunt. These frack rigs are lit up at night and they flare at night. And if you're camping, you're going to see that. You're not going to be able to stargaze. You know, there's a pretty big horseback riding camp there, and horses do not cope well with loud, sudden noises. So it's just going to affect every use of the park.
Not to mention a well-established art show in the Salt Fork Park.
Yeah, there's that. They happen to be where the Bigfoot Society holds a major conference every year, and a lot of people go to that. And impact on visitors is one of the 9 things that have to be considered that they're just not discussing.
So in a worst-case scenario, if all of this goes through and Salt Fork State Park and a couple of the others are, in fact, surrounded by fracking wells, and visitors' use of the park, enjoyment of the park is gravely compromised, or if there are toxic spills, or if there is, you know, tangible damage to mm-hmm. the parks as a result of this, might that cause a change of heart either in the legislature, well, maybe not the legislature, mm-hmm. but the commission at least, or in the public view, such that no further fracking might be permitted?
Well, one would hope. The public is pretty much against this as it is. The parks make up only 3% of land in Ohio. They were set aside to be protected for people's use, for a place to go and get into nature and get away from city sounds and stress and to just replenish. And that won't be possible at parks anymore. And the damage will be irreparable if this happens. It's not something that, you know, you can just come, you know, it will come back, but not if fracking is just, say, done and then halted and taken away. Eventually it'll come back, but not in the same way as it is before it's, you know, destroyed. So we just don't want to see these gems of Ohio And Ohio is a very industrialized state otherwise. So that's why people love the park so much, because it's the one small area that isn't. And especially in eastern Ohio, they've pretty much fracked everything else. And so it's like they've taken everything else, and now they want the 3% that is the parks too. And it's just not right.
I was wondering if the targeting of the state parks was due to the fact that fracking has been so prolific in those areas that the state parks are among the only places left that haven't been molested, or if it's a matter of the cost, because we heard one of the commissioners talk about the leasing rates that the state charges, which are well below market value, in fact, could even constitute a net loss for the state in terms of potential revenue. Is that one of the driving factors? Is that what makes the state park so attractive?
Yeah, I think it's both of those. So I've seen maps from Frack Tracker where they trace the lateral lines. And so if you look at Valley Run or Salt Fork, there's just these lateral lines all around them. And then it just stops at the park border because the law said you couldn't frack there. And they just, you know, they've taken everything else. And I do want to mention one other thing regarding the economy. So Ohio State University did a study about outdoor recreation in Ohio showing that it generates $8.1 billion per year in income in Ohio and about 134,000 jobs because so many millions of people go to our parks and other outdoor spaces as well. But the state parks are, you know, probably are the major draw. And meanwhile, there's another study from the Ohio River Valley Institute of the top fracked counties in Ohio and other states, but there's seven of them in Ohio, showing job losses, population losses, economy losses. So the fracking companies will promise that it's going to make you all this, you know, that's going to bring money and wealth. And somebody's making money off of that, but it is not the communities that are dealing with it. And so that gas, one of the major companies that wants to frack Salt Fork is in Houston. These are out-of-state companies, and that money will go out-of-state at a very cheap rate, like you mentioned. And then, you know, the community there is not going to benefit. Meanwhile, if we kept protecting our parks, the community would benefit. It is making jobs. It is creating income, and that will do so in perpetuity. So with fracking, even if you let them have at it, they can frack for a few years, and then it's done. And then you've ruined your land. And not even, you know, and then they pick up and leave because they're not making any more money, and they leave these abandoned wells. If we protect our parks, that just keeps going forever because people love their parks.
A couple of months ago, I went to Piketon, Ohio, where there was a hearing on the proposed reopening of a uranium enrichment plant there, and we heard reports from people in the community about the toxic effects of the operation of the plant previously, how a lot of people are suffering from cancers, and we heard a really shocking report about the cancer rates in the immediate 15-mile radius, actually in the adjacent several counties wide. Now, cancer rates there are higher, premature death rates there are higher, naturally, because it's Appalachia, it's impoverished, there's less access to healthcare, less access to food and education, etc. So a lot of those factors combined, but there is a clear increase over and above those factors, and I'm wondering about in areas where there's been a heavy amount of fracking, has there been any cumulative study yet to show that the public health impact is greater than the background average?
Yeah, well, there was that study that just came out from Pennsylvania showing that children within a mile of a fracked well have higher rates of childhood cancer, I think lymphoma and some other cancers, and their higher rates of asthma and other health problems. And also the Physicians for Social Responsibility, every year for the past 10 years, they put out a compendium of research about fracking. The last one had 2,000 peer-reviewed studies in it. There is lots and lots of data about health. And we have sent that to the commission. There is lots of data about climate. So there's an organization called Climate Trace that uses like 80,000 data points from satellites and so forth to measure where the carbon emissions are coming from. And it turns out the Marcellus Shale is number 2 in the United States for carbon emissions because of the amount of methane from fracking, and they're number 4 in the world. And the Utica Shale is number 7 in the United States. And Utica is where Salt Fork and Wolf Run are. But the fracking in Ohio is directly, materially contributing to the climate crisis, because methane is 80 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide in the first 20 years. And right now, it's this decade that matters in terms of turning around the climate crisis. And they are just, you know, the head of the Ohio Oil and Gas Association said on WOSU yesterday that they're going to be fracking for decades. Not on a livable planet. You are not. This is making the planet unlivable. 5,000 people swept away in flooding in Libya just this past week. And every day, every week, it's another major climate disaster, and more of them are in the United States. Here in Ohio, we had really done a lot to clean up our air quality. It's now just as bad as it was because of the wildfires in Canada, and those are due in large part to the climate crisis. And the climate crisis is materially due in part to fracking in Ohio, and it is wrong what we're doing, and to tear up our state parks for that, it's just unconscionable.
So what can people concerned about that do now? The next commission meeting date, as I understand, has not yet been announced. Is there any point in trying to reach out to the commissioners, submitting public comments? What concrete actions can people take?
Yes, there is still a point to commenting to the commissioners, because at least it's on the record. And if they do approve this and ignore public comments, well, it's on the record that the public was very clear what they think about this. We have one action alert on our Save Ohio Parks website. There's one that's still open. It's for some of Salt Fork. So I encourage people to go fill that out. But you can also just write your own comment and send it directly to the commission. And you send it to commission.clerk@oglmc.ohio.gov. And you can go to the website also to get this information of the Oil and Gas Land Management Commission. I know that name is a mouthful, but yes, please do keep sending in comments and registering your opposition.
And we'll put a link up on the WCRS website under Conscious Voices to that if you want to submit public comments. Kathy Cohen-Becker, thank you very much for speaking with me, and I'm sure we'll be speaking again soon as this story unfolds.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. That was Kathy Cohen-Becker, one of the organizers of the protest last Monday to object to the opening of Ohio state parks to fracking. We'll have a link on the WCRS website to the portal for submitting public comments to the Oil and Gas Land Use Commission, as well as a link to Save Our Parks. This has been Conscious Voices, heard each week at this time in your community radio stations, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and WGRNLP, now broadcasting at 91.9 FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis, and I'll be with you again next week for another edition. Take care.
It's growing! This movement is growing!
Gas, looking for gas so they can get rich. They'll do anything to dig that ditch. They'll say it's safe, they'll say it's clean to frack that well. They'll say anything. Don't be a fool, don't sign on the line, or you'll be sorry in due time. 'Cause you can't drink money.
oil man. Yes, you bought his lies. Or maybe it's true that you do anything to get rich too. You sell your soul, your healthy life, all the trees, the wildlife. But God, just be warned, when your well is curse flows, dollar bills won't quench your thirst. Cause you can't drink money. Slick little ads that make it seem like you're the second coming with a drilling machine. The devil himself could make that sell if he were drilling your toxic wells. But the devil don't have what the oil man got. That's deep pockets in a prime time spot. Oh, you can't drink money. What you gonna do when the water turns blue and everybody's sick, including me and you? Even the gas man's sick as he's driving away, looking for another sucker he can't pay. Oh, you can't drink money. Oh,
you can't drink money.
Oh,
you can't drink money.
Oh,
you can't drink money.
Oh,
you can't drink money.
The program you are listening to is broadcast both on community radio station WCRS via translator W245AY at 98.3 FM and on WGRN 94.1 FM, WCRSFM.org and WGRN.org. If you like what you're hearing or want to get involved, please visit those websites and give what you can. Both stations are non-commercial and volunteer-run. Both stations depend on listener support. Again, the websites are WCRSFM.org for WCRS and WGRN.org for WGRN.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
You're listening to WGRN 94.1, Columbus Community Radio, the Green Renaissance.
This is Professor Howard Zinn. The independent, non-commercial radio station you're listening to is really important in the maintenance of democracy. Thomas Jefferson once said, an informed democracy will behave in a reasonable manner. So if you care about being informed, if you care about democracy, if you're a reasonable person, you are, of course, please support your source for uncensored news and views and the voice of your community.